You're listening to the Cap and Haw Show.
I'd have to look at the tape, Dan.
I have to check the tape, Dan. That'd be Dan Weider. Chicago Tribune does great work on the Bears beat. I'm David Kaplan. He's Jeff. I mean, David Haw. Isn't that what Trestman called you, Jeff?
He did a couple times.
Welcome back to WGN Plus at Comcast Sportsnet. Dan Weider is here. He gets ready to lose his life for the next 6 months. Camp starts on Wednesday. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. You excited?
Yeah, as excited as you can be in late July to be giving time, up your life for the next few months.
Time.
Yeah, but it is time. It is time to start seeing what this team has to offer. And once you get to the point of getting past those first couple days of camp where you're just watching guys carry pillows and TVs into their dorms and you start seeing some actual football, then the adrenaline spikes a little bit.
All right, so the Bears are sitting in Vegas at 7 is the over-under.
Yeah.
Good article. Amanda Kashubi just tweeted out, you on one side take the over, Rich Campbell on the other take the under. How do you really believe?
So let's just get this straight right out of the gates. Last year, we were the other way around, where I was the pessimist and Rich was the optimist. So we just switched roles this year. And so I had to go and find those reasons to be optimistic that the Bears could get to 500. I think there are a few to believe that this team can make a turnaround. And I do think that John Fox's entrance, just given his track record in both Carolina and Denver, will give this team a boost, an energy boost, an understanding that he's going to put them in the best position to succeed, as he's done with the Panthers and Broncos. That will make a spark. There's obviously a ton of questions. And if you're a betting man, Rich's reasons to bet the under are probably smarter and more ones you want to gravitate to this point. But I do think there are reasons that this team can be better than a year ago. And if everything falls in the line and they stay healthy, 8 wins is
within reach. I agree with
that.
I think the impact could be felt most offensively. I think you're going to see a smarter approach.
Correct.
And I think you're going to see maybe a more efficient Jay Cutler. I think you're going to see a little bit more of a game plan that's conducive to the type of style the Bears have to play under John Fox. I have a hard time seeing, though, on the defensive side of the ball, any answers. I don't know that talent-wise this is a really good mix. I don't know that they're there yet. That's why I struggle to see, you know, 500 or better. I think they'll probably just flirt with that idea, but I still think there are too many issues defensively to have too much hope.
I have a ton of questions going into camp, and I know you guys joked about it before the break that Vic Fangio's arrival doesn't necessarily create this massive revival within the defense. There are a lot of questions on all three levels of the defense, and we don't know anything about the defense right now. Maybe 3 weeks from now we can come back from Bourbonnais as we head down to Indianapolis for those couple practices that they'll have against the Colts and get a measuring stick of where this defense is and how these pieces fit together. For Vic Fangio, I think that he has a smart approach of, he's just got a track record of understanding how not only to put guys in the right situation, but to find the right combinations of guys. And that's going to be essential. That's going to be absolutely essential. You've mentioned they have no answers at linebacker. You're going to have to find four that work well together. You're going to have to find those three defensive linemen up front that can make some sort of an impact to even start the defense going. And then you've got to find the corners. I mean, you've got a guy in Tim Jennings that the last regime signed for big money to an extension 2 years ago, and he doesn't fit at all in this defense. So now he's got to find a home. He's got to find a role. A lot of guys like this up and down the roster that you got to get answers
for. See Nickelback more than likely?
That's where they want to play him. Yeah. Now he tried there a little bit a year ago, was uncomfortable.
Wasn't a great
it's not
fit.
A natural fit
right.
there. And so he's going to have to fight for a role. He's going to have to fight for playing time, and they're going to have to find an answer. You know, because if Kyle Fuller is your clear number one corner, who starts opposite him on the other side? That's up for grabs.
Alan
as well.
Ball is getting a lot of money.
He wasn't healthy through the offseason.
Right.
So you have to be durable, not just make a lot of money to get the playing time.
On the offensive side, this is the last year for Matt Forte.
Yeah.
He approaches the team, says, let's do a new deal.
Yeah.
And Ryan Pace, I'm glad he did, said, no.
Yeah.
We'll talk after the season.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, and what type of a year do you expect out of Forte?
You know, I with all of these guys, I think Ryan Pace was entirely justified in taking the wait-and-see approach with these guys. Past success is something, but it's not everything, particularly because you don't know how Matt Forte fits within this structure, within this game plan, within Adam Gase's offense. So why not take a look at that before you start investing long-term money in a guy, especially a guy, as we know, who's approaching his 30th birthday later this season. I think it was smart to take a wait-and-see approach. And despite Matt Forte's initial disappointment in some of the public, I don't even want to call it griping because I don't think it was that strong from him at times, I think he's come to an understanding of his reality. And he's a professional enough, and he's older and more mature than he was several years ago in a different situation, obviously, with his contract, that he can compartmentalize the business side. And once camp starts, he's going to be full-fledged ahead. They're going to make him a big part of this attack. They've made it very clear that they want to be a more run-heavy attack. They understand how durable and productive Matt Forte has been over the last 4 or 5 years here. And so I think he is going to be sort of that linchpin and that central figure that helps to take pressure off of Jay. And I think that's something, obviously, the last regime, a general manager and by extension a head coach and play caller, didn't quite understand how to do.
Yeah, and I think he's at a different stage of his career. He's gotten paid.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Forte is not underpaid. He's making $8 million a year. He signed that big contract. I think that's what he's getting. And I think that he has proven his worth. So I think he's at a different level in terms of needing this contract. That's why he's not been as vocal about it, perhaps. The Bears better be a heavy run team. I mean, yeah. I don't know who that second component is. Maybe it's Langford, the rookie. It's got to be him because I don't know that any other options that they have. They're going to probably rely heavily on their tight end. Where is Martellus Bennett mentally? Where will he be physically? And what kind of act do you expect from him? Because you're going to get an act.
Well, and it's a fair question because if you remember – before Martellus Bennett had that Pro Bowl season a year ago, he had some rough moments in training camp, particularly a suspension from the team for several days after the little spat with Kyle Fuller. And so he's got to come in. He's not necessarily one of these grinder guys that loves the dog days of training camp. And this is a regime that likes the guys who love the grind of training camp. And so there's going to be not only the contract issue, but just that sort of dynamic is how much are you willing to invest every single day, every single meeting to be up to the standards that are being set here.
He's a tremendous note taker, Dan.
I mean,
he's a tremendous note taker. That's what we always heard about him, right? He's always filling notebooks left, front, and back.
He's a really good football player. We know that much. And on game days, he gives you everything he has and obviously was quite a weapon not only last year but the year before and is a guy that they're going to need. Again, last year we were talking all about how Jay Cutler could carry this team to new heights. Now we're talking about how can they take pressure off Jay so they doesn't have to do too much and he can minimize those mistakes. And obviously the turnovers were catastrophic here.
Dan Wiederer is in our studio from the Chicago Tribune. Okay, you've covered football for a long time. I've been on that beat. He's been on that beat for like 60 years. How in the hell did a majority of people look at last year's team a year ago to the day and go, yeah, that team can win 11 games?
You bought into the success that they had offensively with Josh McCown as the quarterback, and you thought that Mark Trestman was a guy who was aligning the pieces together to really take that offense up another notch in year two.
They averaged 30 points a game.
It didn't happen.
I don't care. You look back now a year ago, and the majority of the football writers out there that picked that team for 11 wins had to be
drunk. Stop with the football writers. Let him continue his reasonable explanation.
There was a sense that this team was going to make a stride forward offensively, that they were going to do things correctly, that Mark Trestman had found ways to unlock a arsenal of playmakers. They still have most of those guys, minus Brandon Marshall. You looked around, Marshall, Jeffrey, Forte, Bennett, Cutler, and you thought that offense was going to carry them and was going to make a very suspect defense a little, you know, less exposed. It didn't happen. And obviously once things started to spiral right before the bye when you had the loss in New England and then you come back from the bye and you get the doors blown off in Green Bay, at that point the bottom fell out of that thing and the last, you know, 7-8 weeks of the season. We don't need to relive it now because that was painful for everybody who had to be there on a daily basis, players, coaches, media, everybody.
Yeah, but I don't think, Cap, it's easy to say now. It's so easy to say now. Don't go back and do that, man. Come on. A year ago, they were looking like with an offense that was coming off a great year and you had defensive pieces that free agency looked like smart acquisitions. 10-11 wins wasn't over your skis. It really wasn't.
It was.
No, it wasn't. Because this is a team that was a great example of why you need strong coaching in the NFL. Because we all, if we're guilty of anything, and don't exclude yourself from this equation, we all overestimated the value and importance and of a Mark Trestman. We thought that he was a different kind of coach because he was, but we thought that was going to have a positive overall impact. The Kumbaya Bears were going to be the team that got along so well together that chemistry was going to make a difference. We overstated that. But from a football perspective, there's no reason they were a 4-12 team last year. Going in, they were a 10-win team. Football-wise, yes.
They didn't have talent the talent.
Wise, yes, they were. Yes, they were.
No shot.
The NFL is a weird place, and there's a very thin line between 11 wins and 5 wins, and the Bears got down that slippery slope to go down towards 5 wins a year ago. Obviously, the miscalculation on Mark Trestman was that he'd be able to rally an entire locker room. He got through to pockets of it, but not the whole locker room, and then once things started to spiral, the doubt, there was no credibility, and guys stopped believing in what he was selling.
His replacement is a guy that you got to know very well. When we come back, we want to talk to you about your epic story, great story yesterday in the Chicago
Tribune. Yeah, we're going to get you ice for your fingers. How long was that thing? That was great.
It was long.
Very well done. Sports Talk Live at 5 tonight. Both sides of our town on our air tonight. Sox at Boston tonight at 6. Cubs Rockies tonight, 6:30 pregame on CSN Plus. Mark Schanowski will have the pregame with Holly. I am off tonight because I'm doing that autism.
Oh, that's right. That's
Ski will be there.
That's great.
Quick timeout. Dan Wiederer, more with him in our studio. I'll be right back.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
I've been, you know, part of a 2-14 season. You know, been blessed to not have too many of those. But it happens, and it's tough. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see, you know, how to fix that, not so much how to evaluate what happened because I wasn't here.
Hey, Cap'n Haw, brought to you by Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. They won the largest verdict for a brain injury in the history of our state, largest verdict for a back injury in Illinois history, and the largest verdict for a neck injury in Illinois history. That is the Secretariat of Lawyering, Triple Crown winners, Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. These guys win. That was our guy, Foxy, John
American Pharaoh.
Fox.
You could use that reference, too. You're dating yourself.
Secretariat
showing
beats
your
him
bias.
By 15
lengths. It's the current day.
Not even close.
It's current day. 312 says I'm testy. Am I testy today to you?
No, they just wrote that I'm testy.
Well, we're both testy. Okay, but
should I get testy?
Yeah, you can get testy all,
right, cool.
all you
That's
want.
It. Dan Wiederer from the Tribune is in our studio. It's Cap'n Haw.
Tremendous story in the Chicago Tribune yesterday. It was worth the time. It was a long story, 4,500 words or so, and I think that you got to know John Fox a little bit. You introduced people into different phases of his life, of his career. What stands out about the time you spent getting to know him better, and what did you learn that you didn't know going in?
One of the things that I love about this profession and my role in this business is being able to study team building and leadership from a lot of different vantage points, and you get a chance to tap into a lot of different people who have had roles to do those things. Obviously, John Fox is at the forefront of this for the Bears right now, and to hear some of his philosophies on leadership, I thought it was intriguing to hear him talk about how important managing and motivating people are. That if you don't know anything about X's and O's, but you are successful at managing and motivating people, the success can come from that. It's an interesting philosophy. Along with that, when he referred to football and coaching in the NFL as a service industry, that was one of those things that really struck my ear, because his philosophy on that is that you can't, like a good restaurant, you can't just have good food. You have to have good service. You have to create a good environment. You have to create an energy that people want to come back to over and over and over again. And so his goal at Hallis Hall is all throughout the building, the weight room, throughout the offices, throughout the coaching offices, throughout the locker room, creating an energy, creating an enthusiasm that everybody is excited to come to work. And when you have that excitement coming to work, more often than not, you're productive. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see
they weren't
how quickly
contrast
that comes.
That with what happened 2 years ago when we heard similar things about Mark Trestman, quote unquote, changing the culture and creating this whole new, like the considerate head coach. How is this different?
I just think that John Fox has a much longer track record of building success with the way he does things. You go back to his time as a coordinator of the New York Giants and the number of guys who loved playing for him, who felt that he brought out the best in them, who he found their strengths and not only identified their strengths, but put them in positions to use those strengths.
Sounds
often.
Like Rich Gannon talking about Mark Trestman.
and it's understandable to be skeptical, because I do think that every time you have a coaching change, there is this surge of optimism and this surge that things are going to be better and things are going to be different. All I will point back to is the fact that in each of his last three stops, Fox in New York, in Carolina, and Denver, he has had success. Now, sustaining that success is a whole different story, but I do think it's interesting to hear the players that have played for him at multiple stops. Eddie Royal comes to the Bears having played for him in Denver. Dante Rosario has played for him in Carolina, Denver, and now Chicago, and hearing how consistent he's remained throughout his career in being able to summon up the energy and be able to relate to players. And you hear it from all these guys that either played under him or coached with him. Just his ability to connect with people, I think, supersedes what Mark Trestman had. I think Mark Trestman connected with certain guys within the Bears, but he was a different guy. We all know that. He was a little bit different personality-wise. And to rally a locker room that's going to be 90 deep when we get to Bourbonnais and 53 when we get to the regular season, it takes an ability to connect with a lot of different types of people. John Fox seemingly has that.
Fine listener, viewer out there that's at home drinking coffee watching says, the 2013 Bears went 8-8 with a new head coach, Josh McCown, 5-6 defensive starters lost to injury, and then they add defensive linemen at free agency in the draft, and you saw them as a 5-11 team. Yeah, the writers were drunk. Please, I want you picking stocks for my 401k. Signed, John Mullen, Deerfield, Illinois. Our guy.
Thanks
Moon.
For watching, Moon.
Thanks, Moon. I got him 6. I had him 6-10 last year. I was overly optimistic. I just look at this team. Not a J guy. He could be decent. Decent. If they run the football.
Are you
more.
On record as not a J guy? I'm not sure I've heard that.
Yeah, you've never said that before. I don't like their offensive line enough. I don't think there's any depth there whatsoever. And guys do get banged up at that position. I think their defensive line and their linebackers are really questionable. And then I add in the Packers. I think the Vikings and the Lions are all better in the division. And that schedule is really tough.
It's really tough.
I just don't see how they win 6 ball games.
But again, like I say, the NFL, it's a very thin line. And health becomes a major factor. You catch a couple breaks early, you get on a little bit of a roll, and all of a sudden 6 can become 7, can become 8. And that's what the Bears are hoping to capture this year. I think, obviously, it's a long shot to think that they'll be competing for a wild card late in December. But just to show a little bit of progress, to show that they do have the right blend of people. I think we saw at the end of last year that they were trying to mix and match a lot of different parts, a lot of different philosophies. You saw the roster churn that Phil Emery was so addicted to that impacted them dramatically on special teams and made their special teams unit look awful. I think you're going to see just a little bit more polished approach, I think, on all levels.
So
hopefully,
John Fox comes here from the Broncos, and he obviously had previous experience with the Panthers. And each time along the way, I think your previous experience informs how you're going to handle your next job. What about the Broncos' experience can he use to his advantage in Chicago? And would you say that he's coming out of that with something to prove, bitter even, because of the way things ended there? How would you, his state of mind after leaving Denver after 4 seemingly successful seasons?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because you don't often see a guy win 4 division championships, play in a playoff game on Sunday, and be hired as a new coach somewhere else by the end of that week.
That was the most interesting piece, where he said they lose, he talks to Elway, and then you've got him like at dinner with Ryan Pace, like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, and just a bizarre sort of sequence of events for in a short period of time for an NFL coach. And I think he put aside that bitterness pretty quickly. I think that there was an understanding that him and John Elway just didn't click, that the rapport wasn't there, that their philosophies on taking to the Broncos to the next level were a little bit divergent, if you will. And I think what John Fox saw is that, okay, I just have to find somebody that I can really connect with. Obviously, the connection to this point with Ryan Pace has been profound. They had a lot of people, you know, mutual acquaintances and friends around the league that told them they'd get along together. I think that's going to be very beneficial. But I think when you look back, some people would like to give a lot of the success that John Fox had in Denver, the credit for that, to Peyton Manning, and understandably so. He's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. But John Fox has also been to the playoffs with Tim Tebow. He's also been to the playoffs with Jake Delhomme. So he has a track record of lifting teams to the postseason, even without a Hall of Fame quarterback like Peyton Manning. And he deserves credit for that, because it requires you to move parts around and solidify things in other areas.
Not the first flawed quarterback he's encountered.
Right, correct. Obviously, Tim Tebow was out of the league for 2 years and couldn't get a job anywhere, and John Fox had them winning a playoff game.
And when he called that his most fascinating season in football, what was the adjective he used to describe that?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look.
But he talked about how just you go into that year, they started badly.
1-4.
He makes the change, revamps the entire playbook. To me, that's as impressive of a season as John Fox has had coach, because he was doing it in a way that wasn't consistent with what anybody else in the NFL has ever done.
And one of the footnotes on that season that's even more impressive is that was right after the lockout. So they did not have an offseason as a new coaching staff to get to know players through OTAs and mini camps and start to put pieces together. So you're adjusting on the fly at every step of that season. You start out 1-4, you hit the bye, everybody's still down in Denver. All of a sudden you put in Team Tebow and you go on this run, this unprecedented run. Obviously the Bears saw it in Denver that season when they lost that game in dramatic fashion.
That's still the most amazing loss I've ever watched, with the 58-yard field goal to tie it, with Marion Barber staying in bounds.
Yeah.
That
was like the 4th wildest game that the Broncos played that season, you know, and it was as you said, it was crazy. And just every week there was something new, and this belief swelled, whether it was Tebow's leadership, whether it was Fox's leadership,
whether it was
2011.
2000.
No. Yeah, right?
Yeah, 2011. That was the Caleb Haney game, right?
Yeah.
That was the year that things fell apart, yeah. for Angelo. That was two general managers ago.
Crazy.
A lot of change has happened here in recent years. I mean, it's just been an upheaval. The Bears have been anything but the model of stability. I think the thing that why John Fox appealed to them so much. That structure.
Yeah.
Do you believe John Fox privately, he's ever obviously never going to say it publicly, Theo and Jed, when they took over the Cubs, they knew they had a bad team. And they went, look, we're going to be transparent. It's going to be a process. It's taking some time. Do you think privately, if you and John Fox were having a glass of wine, and you said, what do you really think? He'd say, we're a 7-win football team. It's going to take time, but we're going to get this thing turned quick.
I don't think he would put win totals on it, but I do think there is a very realistic vision at Halas Hall that's very important to understand, that Ryan Pace and John Fox understand that this isn't going to be this rapid turnaround where they're suddenly overnight competing with the Packers to be the the perennial champion of the NFC North. They know that this roster needs a couple off seasons to overhaul, a couple really good drafts to make up for those really bad drafts that we've had in recent years here. I think that they understand that this is going to be a process, and that as much as they want to put everything together now and build around a certain brand of player, that you can't do that in one off season. And so here we go.
You got to know Mark Trestman fairly well as anybody who covers him did. You spent a lot of time with John Fox. Could there be two more head coaches that have any more diametrically opposed personalities?
No.
Different in contrast.
And I think you'll hear that. And one of the things that's always interesting after a coaching staff is fired, obviously even players that stick up for the old regime will be a little bit more open and honest sort of behind the scenes and telling you what went wrong. And I think the Mark Trestman era, as I said, I think he did connect in certain pockets of that locker room. Other guys, it was just way above their head to you understand what NFL locker rooms are like. How hard it is to get guys to think on these deep philosophical levels every single week. And I think there was a sense that they just became too soft, that they were too much about trying to create harmony and not enough about ripping off the other team's head.
There's a credibility gap
yeah.
that John Fox is not going to face because he's done it before and he's won before.
Right. And three stops, right? As we mentioned, the last three stops, he's gone to a Super Bowl in each of those three stops. And so players believe in that right out of the gates.
Do you believe if at the end of the year they are up the track and they get a reasonably high draft pick, they're going to be looking for Jay's replacement, or they got to get somebody that can get to the quarterback?
Well, I mean, I think it's the same as this year. I think Ryan Pace's philosophy is to just make sure you get the best player available with your first-round pick. Doesn't care what position that's at. Don't swing and miss on that first-round pick. When you swing and miss on that first-round pick, it sets you back miles. And so they'll just go ahead and pick the best guy on their board. I do think it's been obvious, really, since January when this regime took over, that they're not putting all their chips behind Jay Cutler, that they're very willing to explore alternatives as soon as alternatives present themselves. And obviously, I don't think that they presented themselves in an appealing fashion during the offseason or during the draft this year. And so they said, we'll ride forward with Jay by necessity, and we'll see where we go from here.
If I told both of you guys you could have Sam Bradford starting a quarterback for the Bears right now, today, Jay's out, would you have taken it?
I mean, the durability issues
Bradford stuff.
You're out of your mind. He's going to have a good year.
Stop it, Chip. Okay?
Telling you, you're going to look back on this
Nobody
conversation.
Nobody cares in Chicago about Sam Bradford. He's not that good. He may be that good when he's healthy, but he's not that healthy.
So if I said to you I could drop him into the Bears and Jay goes to wherever, Philly, St. Louis, you wouldn't have done it.
I would not take Sam Bradford. I can't trust him past week three.
Out of your mind.
I mean, it's a fair question. I think durability is an issue. And like
Don't humor him. You don't have to be nice.
Starting last year, we were banging Jay for durability issues.
Right,
he could never stay healthy, and that was the big knock on him. And then he stayed healthy, and he led the league in turnovers. So which one do you want?
Last thing. The most intriguing player for the Bears this training camp is?
Can I go a combo effort? Can I say Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White?
Because Alshon Jeffery, really?
I think they're connected in some ways because you have these expectations for a first-round pick who's going to have a very steep learning curve and is probably not going to be up to speed as a route runner and as an NFL football player. And so to take pressure off Kevin White, Alshon Jeffery is going to have to prove that he can be a star without Brandon Marshall in his corner. And so I think looking at those receivers and trying to figure out where Jay's go-to guys are, I'm very intrigued to see how that matches up, and obviously Eddie Royal will be a factor in there as well because he's a guy that Jay has familiarity with, can do some things that Adam Gase is very excited about, and so hopefully he can lock those. But those are two guys, Jeffery and White, that really need to prove something this year, but on different levels, a rookie and a guy trying to take that next step into to becoming a perennial star.
Appreciate you being here.
Yep.
Anytime, guys.
Keep up the great work.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming in the building.
Dan Weider from the Tribune.